Hi, welcome to Portland Pizza Podcast, a show about all things pizza. Broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, we feature in-depth interviews with some of the most influential pizza makers in Portland and beyond. I'm your host, Tommy Habits from Pizza Jerk. Let's talk pizza. Welcome to the Portland Pizza Podcast. This is our second episode, and welcome Sarah Minnick from Lovely's 5050 here to the podcast this morning. Sarah, it's such a pleasure, such an honor to have you here this morning. Thank you.
Thanks, welcome. Tommy. Thanks for having me.
Sarah is the owner of Lovely's 5050 here in Portland, Oregon. It's a business that she started, how many years ago?
It's almost 10 years old.
Dang. And you started originally in another location as a full-service restaurant and then switched to pizza 10 years ago.
Yeah. Wow. And then the old restaurant was 15 years old this month.
Wow.
I mean, it doesn't exist anymore, but it was started 15 years ago.
You moved locations twice.
Right.
In the course of the business. Amazing.
That's
unbelievable.
Well, we had to change it because the old house that we bought was really small. Mm-hmm. It sat like 24 people.
Yeah.
And it was in a house which was, had its annoying parts to it. So,
And the second location was literally next door to your present location.
Yeah. So first we bought that house. We bought it residentially, the one down the street on Cook. And it was this teeny little, 1,000-square-foot house. And I put the restaurant in there, redid the whole thing, really cheap, all of it, kind of amazing to think of it now. And then that we had that for 2.5 years or almost 3 years. And then the building next door was an old flower shop. Mm-hmm. And we live in the neighborhood and saw it go for sale along with this property that's like was two commercial lots, I think. And so our friends who are developers bought the whole thing and then just separated the old brick building and sold it to us. And so then we sold our old location and then bought that building next door and improved it all and still own that building. But we're planning to have both restaurants around 2010. And then it was like the financial crisis basically happened. Mm-hmm. And that restaurant was sort of more of a fine dining special occasion. Like people were like, oh, we're going to come here once a year on our birthday. We love this place. And it was just like, that's not really enough. We wanted to have more casual. So we decided actually at the last minute to close that restaurant and just have this one.
Okay.
So but that's why we didn't like change and still own that building and change into a restaurant that operated in there anymore. Because we weren't planning on that.
So that restaurant closed about 2009?
2010. And then we opened this one 2 weeks later.
Right on.
Yeah.
Cool. Did you intend on being a pizza maker? I mean, was
no,
that?
No. Uh-uh. Yeah. I had a friend who made pizza, and so my mom actually wanted to open a hamburger place.
Oh, okay.
Because she was looking to retire, but she wanted to take her 401k and like invest it somewhere, uh-huh. which in a restaurant, I mean, it's not the best idea. but she wanted to have a hamburger place, and I was like, I can't deal with that, like French fries and hamburgers. And I mean, I'm kind of like mostly vegetarian, even. I was just like, eh. So, So I said, well, but pizza, because I had like Troy McClarty was a chef next door, and we had gone down to the Bay Area and gone to Chez Panisse and had their little pizzas, which always had like salt cloud brandade and like different kind of ingredients, and been to some Bay Area pizza places that like Chez Panisse alum had owned. And so I was like, I think I could really get down with that because it's a lot of like salads and pizza and everything else. So maybe pizza. And I had this friend who made pizza, and he started out running the kitchen and ran it for like the first 2 years. So, and then when he left, I just took it over because I had been, when we closed the old Lovely's, Lovely Houlihan's, I realized when Troy left from Bollywood Theater to go run, do whatever he was mm-hmm. going to do and then run Bollywood, I was hiring chefs, and I realized like this isn't really what I want to do, is like broker chefs. And so when we changed and came over here, I worked in the kitchen part time and on the floor part time. Mm-hmm. So I was still able to do the wine list and work in the kitchen, and I made ice cream and did the salads, but I never did the pizza at all. Like I never even did any part of it. And so when he left, I just took it over, and it was just kind of like, okay. And I think it kind of sucked for at least a few months. And then I started to like teach myself how to make bread from books and internet stuff. and just slowly changed the dough over to be sourdough and just more carefully fermented and just carefully considered. And then started to get more into integrating a lot more produce and stuff onto the toppings too. So that was good. I didn't really know if I would stay on the pizza part. I kind of liked working both, but I found out that I actually really liked making pizza. It was kind of a weird surprise.
Awesome. That's such an incredible story. A very empowering story of just like being able to take control of your business and step up and, you know, become and rise to the level that you've risen. It's just,
it was really hard. I mean, when I had like, cause I, my son was one, I think, he was still a baby, you know, like, and I was just like, okay. And it took a lot of sacrificing like family stuff to come in and learn that and run the kitchen. I mean, it did, it was, you know, not super fair to everybody, but it was just kind of like, we have a family owned business. I own the business with my mom, my sister. It was kind of like, you know, like something's got to go here. So we have to do it.
I mean, I know personally, yeah, that's a really hard thing to juggle your family and your business and everything all at once. And especially it must be even harder at it having to, you know, being in the business with your mom and your sister also. Yeah.
I mean, that's the silver lining of it. A lot of people are like, oh, it's responsibility because it's like, if you can't just close the restaurant and change your career or do so, you know, it's kind of a lot riding on this tender, like, vehicle, but... Yeah, it's really good to have that support too, and have people that are going to be in your life no matter what. It's not like partners come and go, and you know, it's like the people actually are going to permanently be there, which is kind of crazy to think about, and it's great too.
Well, before we get it going any further, my favorite interviewer that I know is Nardwar. Do you know Nardwar?
Mm-mm.
He's a Nardwar, the human serviette from from Vancouver, British Columbia. He just is this one guy that has been interviewing, but it's mostly music, mostly like kind of hip hop and like indie punk artists, you know, like that come in through Vancouver, but he goes to like music festivals and stuff. And one of the things that he does is he always gives his interviewee gifts right off the bat.
So okay.
I'm going to give you a couple. Right. I'm going to give you a couple gifts.
Great.
Right off the bat. First of all, Matt from Starter Bread came by Pizza Jerk yesterday,
cool.
And so I'm bringing you a loaf of bread.
Beautiful.
From Matt.
Thank you.
Who also worked for you?
Yeah, Matt. So Matt worked here like when Jimmy, the guy that ran the kitchen, left, and it was just kind of like he watched it and was like super supportive and like very sweet during the whole thing, and we kind of like learned a bunch of stuff together kind of, which was really cool. And so I mean, I have like a huge soft tender spot for him.
He's great and I
love what he's doing now, and this looks great.
That's he's a great guy. Starter Bread, you should check it out on Instagram, and you can sign up for his bread program. Give him a little plug, you know. So check that out.
Yeah, he does a bread CSA.
He does a bread CSA.
Where he delivers it to your house. I don't know how long that's going to last. I'm like, the delivery is really nice.
Well, I think there's like pickup spots too around the city too. So I signed up for it yesterday, and I thought that the pickup was like literally right around the corner from our house in Foster Powell, but I think it's maybe moved a few blocks away. But either way, it's like, yes, it's a bread CSA that where he bakes this bread out of his home, and you know, you get bread like once a week for, you know, 4 weeks in a month. And that.
Right. Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
It's pretty
very
cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very smart.
And then I also know that you're a big fan of fermenting, and so I got you this book
called
Fermentation on Wheels.
I've heard of it, but I don't have it.
Right.
Thank
on.
You.
Oh, good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
That's so cute.
This is Tara from, she's a young woman from Eugene, and I think has traveled around and has a whole lot of stories about fermenting and traveling.
Very
so
cool.
Yeah.
Thank
so,
you.
Yeah.
That's so cute. I like the size, too.
Right
it's
on.
Not too big.
Yeah,
which is nice.
Yeah. I know. It's, so, you're welcome. Tell me a little bit about yourself, like kind of where are you from, and kind of your background really before you started Lovely's 50 or Lovely Houlihan's. You didn't have a big restaurant background. You were an artist. You were an art, you
right.
worked on
yeah.
art school, right?
Mm-hmm. I grew up in Portland And then I went to Rhode Island for school, Rhode Island School of Design. I have a degree in fine arts.
Oh, awesome.
And so I was a painter for those years. And then
Serious school. I mean,
right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I moved
when
I
moved. Heads went.
Is where what?
Talking Heads went.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. And so when I moved back to Portland, I kept a studio for a while and I worked at coffee shops, restaurants, all that. And then maybe, I think it was about 3 years after I graduated college, I went to LA for a year and got a degree in fashion design because I came really interested in like pattern making, sewing and stuff like that.
Very
so
cool.
I wanted to learn that and maybe have like a dress company, clothing company, something like that. So I went down there, learned that, came back here and looked at the newspaper, like jobs, and there was a job for a pattern maker at Adidas. And so, and I was just like, I'm just gonna apply for this. And I just went in and got the job. And so I worked for Adidas for like 3 years making patterns for basketball clothing.
Oh, wow, very cool.
So during that time, I like bought a house in North Portland. And then, but I became like, I had always worked in restaurants and really liked that. And even at RISD, I ran like the student run cafe. And I kind of loved that more than school, like in some ways, or I liked it in as much, you know, as like all the classes. And so I had a boyfriend at the time who was like, don't you want to like have a restaurant or something? It just seems a little more like you want to be a teacher. That doesn't really seem like you, like a painting teacher, because that's kind of what I thought I would do. And then anyway, so a couple years go by working Adidas, structured jobs, healthcare, all this stuff, everything. And I just wasn't happy with the schedule. It's kind of a lack of creativity. I didn't really like having like a looming boss. Not that I couldn't do it, I just kind of was just like dissatisfied with like the reviews and the, you know, you're just kind of like, oh my god, is this gonna be what I'm gonna do? It doesn't seem right. So my boyfriend at the time was a really good cook, and that's when we decided to buy the pink house and just open a restaurant. I mean, it was kind of an insane idea. We didn't really have very much money. My grandpa like gave us like $50,000 because he had inherited money from his brother when he died, and so he just wrote us a check for 50 grand, and we were just like, great, we can get like a stove and a hood. And so we just did it. I mean, and so that lasted for 2 or 3 years, and we really did love it. I mean, it was really fun. And I think it was just that when we moved and had Troy, who had come from like Japanese background, that really infused more of the seasonal cooking, and I kind of saw like what a restaurant next steps could be to like be more, you know, integrated into the community, using farms, you know, being a neighborhood restaurant, like kind of what it actually meant to involve like a lot of people from the community and localize it a little more. But yeah, so I didn't come from that, but just having those, like, I think my first job was working at Coffee People drive through on MLK.
Oh, I remember that.
And I just went in, like, I think I was like home from college in the summer, like my freshman year, and I just like went in and applied, and I got the job, and I would wear the headset and run the drive-through,
uh-huh.
And everyone's like, you're so good at this. I was just like, oh no, like, I don't know if that's good or not, but I could, like, there was like a time, it was like every drink had to go out in 3 minutes, and I kind of loved it. I was just like, yeah, I could totally like make all the drinks, get them out in 3 minutes, charge everybody, and then send them on their way. So it was kind of this weird thing, but in that time, I met Brad and Jennifer, who owned the Pied Cow. And this is some old, like, old history, Portland history. And they used to come get coffee there. And they, like, I had actually always gone there ever since I got my driver's license in high school. I would drive over to the Pied Cow and, like, get tea and feta and olives and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, and so they knew me for being a regular, and they offered me a job at Pied Cow. And so then I started to work there in the summers. And that was, like, my dream job, basically, and kind of integrated me into like knowing them. And we would go to, like, after work we would go out every single night. We would go to Fellini Satyricon, we would go to you know, Dots. Like, literally, that was sort of this formative years of my, like, teen, you know, early 20s, and got me really interested. Seeing them run that, I think, really got me interested in running a restaurant.
Nice. That's some classic Portland stuff right there.
Super, super old school.
It's funny. I remember a lot of that because I was a volunteer for Habitat for Humanity here in Portland in 1994. And so, yeah, I mean, that was what I remember, that whole scene. I mean, Coffee People was like, huge.
I know.
It was just such, like, that was the only coffee in town. You had to have your...
I know. Remember the one on 23rd? It was like... What was it? It was like an emergency room coffee place.
Oh, yeah.
It was like emergency care, and it was a coffee shop or something.
They were huge. Yeah.
They used to come into the one and do like quality checks, and I always thought it was a little weird. Not to be like dissy, but they would come in and like look at the pastry case and make sure somebody had cleaned it correctly. Like kind of a strange, like, I definitely was like, I don't think I'm going to be that type of owner.
Well, I have such fond memories of that original lovely Houlihan spot, and next door, and when Troy was there, and that whole incarnation of it.
Yeah,
you know?
That's good to know.
But totally. I mean, because that was going on when I was at Ripe.
Right.
And,
yeah.
So I mean, we were neighbors. We were just down the hill from each other, and so I remember going in there a number of times.
Oh yeah. Well, when I worked at Adidas, I would go to Ripe for lunch.
Right on.
Dude, I don't even remember that, but I would see you. You'd be like reading the paper in the back, you know, and
not
I would get
working.
Like a panzanella to go or something. I totally remember that. Or get the waffles. You guys had the malted waffles.
Oh yeah, those are really good. Yeah, the coffee shop was another great little moment in time.
It must have been the coffee shop.
Yeah, the Gotham Building Coffee
Shop. And you had the Mandy Groom made all the pastries and everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was good.
Yeah,
that was pretty sweet.
Awesome. She's working for Olympia Provisions now.
Oh, yeah, I've talked to her. I've seen her doing events there, so, yeah.
Right on. Let's talk pizza a little bit. So, how would you describe your pizza?
I think, like, because people often ask me to describe it, and a lot of times people think, like, oh, wood-fired pizza is Italian pizza, and people will always say, like, oh, I haven't had this pizza that's this good since I was in Italy, which is really nice, you know, to hear, but I'm always like, well, our pizza is American pizza, just through having to define it and trying pizza, like, you know, in Italy and all over the U.S. now, which I kind of did after I started making pizza, because I had to, like, be educated about the styles, basically, and the history of it, just because so many people, that's what they talk to you about.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird to be like, well, I've never been to, you know, Frank Pepe's. I've never had all those. I don't know what you're saying, you know?
Yeah.
So, but now it actually, our pizza is fully American pizza. It's got a thicker crust. We use aged mozzarella. I don't run my oven at 900 degrees. We run it at a very more American temperature, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I think we definitely have American pizza that's very vegetable focused, which is not super common, although I have seen it a lot, especially also in Italy too. But it's not always the first type of style of pizza that people think about, you know.
It's super seasonal. I mean,
super seasonal.
Yeah, you, and this is something that you've developed over the past 10 years of just like this, you know, a great relationship with farmers, with local farmers, becoming a really incredible relationship, like a very, very symbiotic relationship. You know, like, I mean, you and your pizza, I think you work in a way locally, more locally than just about anybody that I can think of, you know.
And well, it's pretty easy to do with pizza too. I don't need that many things, you know. It's not, and then you can really diversify when you have like seven pizzas, and you have, you know, and some of them can just be cheese and sauce, and some of them can be this. So it's been pretty nice that way.
I think you're being a little bit modest, because I don't know how easy.
Well,
that is.
I do recognize that it's pretty easy to do, because I can just work with what people bring me. It's super flexible.
I think you've gotten a little bit into a groove of doing it, but I mean, to be that creative, to be in that sort, you know, I mean, change makes me a little bit nervous sometimes in a restaurant, because you're having to train people to do a new style of pizza, new different techniques with how you treat the ingredients. But I mean, and then also relying on, you know, what's going to come in, you know, is it going to come in, is it not going to come in, and being flexible to change. So when you know, you're expecting one crop to come in and it doesn't, and all of a sudden you're handed this other thing, and you're like, oh, I'm going to do this, you know. It's like you have to kind of, so that I'm just saying,
that's true.
That's really, to me, you know, as a fellow pizza maker, you know, that is really impressive to me and really, really cool.
I mean, to me, that really is like the fun part of it for me. I don't, it's not, I mean, it, I don't really get frustrated. I see people get frustrated. Maybe we've worked at other restaurants, like cooks that I work with will be like, you better go get this. You're going to go get this. I'm like, well, they're probably not going to have it. And we're just going to have to like wing it, or it's going to like be a little bit, you know, like, one herb's gonna be missing or something, but it's that's just how we do it. Or like there'll be we have like five of these pizzas and then we're switching to this. Like I definitely run all ingredients out. I don't sit on, you know, four quarts of cauliflower or whatever. I'm like, no, we're gonna do that first and then we're gonna, you know, so I think sometimes people are just like, you know, like no.
And you've also cultivated your customers, you know, your audience. Like so to trust you and to and you have a huge fan base, my wife included, number one fan. Brooke is her favorite place that she wants to come to on her birthday. You know, you have people who trust you and come in and they're like, oh, I don't know what Spigarello is, but I'm going to get that because that's like...
That's what has been the most change, I think, over the years is that now I don't have to... Like, we used to have to keep basil, we used to have to keep things around for people who just couldn't hang with the other, you know, with the changes of the seasons or not have... this thing, this pizza thing there. And now it's like people don't, it doesn't, and we never hear anybody complain anymore or ask. Like we used to be like, people would call up and be like, can I get two margaritas to go? And we'd be like, oh, we don't have basil. We're doing like oregano or something. They'd be like, never mind. And you're just like, okay, we can't really afford to like lose those customers. But now like that doesn't happen anymore, which is great. Now people are just like, yeah, whatever. And so there has been that sort of change, which has been great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What are your, I like to talk about pizza, what are your earliest memories of pizza and was growing up in Portland? Did you have like a favorite place that you went to? I mean, there obviously something stuck out in your head so that you, it's what you're doing.
Well, I definitely had, there's probably like three pizza places that were around when I was younger. I think probably my first sort of independent pizza memory is Escape from New York, because do you remember the one that was across from the Galleria? So there was this Escape from New York across from the Galleria. It was pretty small, but it was a double-decker. So, and the top was like an atrium, and you could look down at them, like, making pizza.
Oh, wow.
And I want to say that in my mind, as like 16 or 15, whatever, like when the Max first went in, I would Max down there and go there. And in my mind, those were like, the people that worked there were the coolest people that you could ever imagine. There were like, there was like a really tall guy with a big mohawk. There was like a girl, I remember she had like these, this crazy haircut where it was like, her bangs were like buzzed and then it was really long. Like it was just like, to me, I was just like, opened my mind in this way of like, you couldn't be cooler, you know what I mean? Like no one could be cooler. And you could get like a slice and then go up in the atrium and just watch everybody down below. Making pizza, eating pizza. I was insanely busy, lying down the block, really loud music. I mean, it was like insane. But, and so my memory, that's one of the first ones of like, maybe like the possibilities as you're getting older, like you could work in restaurants, you could do this, you know, and kind of that definitely was an allure to me.
What year was that?
I'm curious what year it closed, because they tore down the building and they just didn't bother to like, move it.
They had the other ones.
I think at the same time.
They had so they're.
I kind of don't think that they. Yeah, I kind of think that they had both. At first, it was just the one downtown, pretty sure, and then they put the other one, and they had both. I think, and then the one downtown, they just tore the building down. They just thought we're just gonna have one. That was like my memory, but that was a long time ago.
That's so cool. I mean,
I don't think I drove yet, so I must have been. And I think the Max probably went in around the time that I was like 13 or 14. And so that was sort of the ticket to going downtown. You know what I mean? In my mind. So there's that one. And then there was always, my dad grew up sort of around American Dream Pizza. Mm-hmm. And that one, my dad always got and still obsesses over and gets. And it's like the braided crust and has eggs. It's like a weird kind of pastry crust. And then anyway... So we had that all the time.
American
delivered.
Dreams on Gleason, right?
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Delivered. And then there was this other weird one that was in a gas station kind of by my mom's house on Sandy Boulevard called Manhattan Pizza. And I don't really remember too much about that except for that we used to go there all the time, like get pizzas to go, whole pizzas. I don't even think it was there that long.
Huh.
And my one memory of that is that I kind of like got brave and decided to call in a pizza or something, and I called, and first it was the wrong number. I just called, it was a person who was like, hello, and I was like, oh, is this Manhattan Pizza? And they were like, no. And so I was like, okay, so I called back, and then the guy was like, this is Manhattan Pizza, and I ordered like a pizza to go, and then I walked down there to the pizza place to pick it up, and they're like, we don't have one for you. And I was just like sort of traumatized because I was young, you know, and it was just like, Some asshole tricked me on the line. And then I went down and was like humiliated by like, there's no pizza here. What are you talking about? We don't have one. And oh, it's an hour and a half to get one. And I was just like, what? Oh my God, yeah. So anyway, those are sort of the three that I could imagine. Yeah.
I wonder when, you know, it's so, I think it's so interesting you're talking about Escape from New York and that setup sounds incredible, like being able to look down and watch the pizza being made. But it's also, I think it's really interesting how you saw that and you were like, they're cool. These are cool people making pizza. Like that was never the case with kitchens for so long. Like up until, like at one point mm-hmm. did people start like looking at kitchens and thinking like, oh, these people are cool that are doing this.
You know, maybe they still don't.
Are you, you know, I like... I think it's sort of definitely that wave is sort of crashing a little bit, but I mean, you know, the whole, you know, celebrity chef thing and all that, like, I mean, it hit a peak for sure, and thankfully the thing's coming down, but like, it really was, I always thought it was really funny, like, when I first started, like, working for some of the chefs that I work for, it's like, you know, it's like, what, like, how are these, like, you know, this is just a, you know, I couldn't understand why they were, like, on TV or famous or what people saw in it.
I know, it's funny because I never really was interested in, like, celebrity chefs. I've seen, like, the shows, whatever, some of them, you know, yeah. I can't even remember what they, like, anyway.
Yeah.
But I definitely always had idols, like, as a young person looking up to people even, like, 5 years older than me, like, in the service industry. So, like, when I worked at Philly Satyricon, I think I was, like, 21. I mean, I had, like, pigtails, yeah. And I was, like, completely naive to everything going on there, which was a lot of crazy stuff, crazy shit. I mean, yeah, it was, yeah. like, drugs, stolen shit, being trafficked, you know, it was, like, yeah, yeah. crazy, crazy stuff. And the bartenders I worked with, who were probably, like, 5 years older than me, maybe, I thought were the most amazing women I had ever met. Like, I was just like, yeah. these women are the coolest.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just funny what you... I don't know what, like, sets somebody up for admiring people. Like, I'm not sure, like, what in your life makes it that... I mean, I admire people who work in restaurants, or I yeah. admire lawyers, or, you know, yeah, I don't yeah. really know. But for some reason, that was always the people that I looked up to and learned from. I mean, it was...
And I think, I mean, you mentioned a couple of, like, probably the coolest places that ever have been. And Portland, really, like, that is, there's something about Portland where there's this real authenticity, you know, for lack of a better word, real genuineness, realness to people doing what they love, how they, you know, like, not settling, doing it, like, how they want to do it. And so you had places like that. You had Escape from New York. You had Fellini, Satyricon. You had Genoa. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, I was really lucky to that. And I felt that kind of that same way of, like, walking into that place and feeling like these were some really cool people that were doing, you know, what they loved, you know. And,
yeah.
And, mm-hmm. And there's still that spirit, I think, in Portland, which is yeah. really cool. Right on. Well, let's talk about, like, pizza now. I mean, do you have favorite places in town? Like, when you're not eating your own pizza, do you go around to other places? Or?
Sometimes I do end up eating pizza. I'd say increasingly, as also with having my son. I mean, now he's 8, and my kids are both totally over going out anywhere. So we usually stay home
yeah, yeah.
these days
cool.
and cook, which is good. I think the Portland pizza scene is amazing. I mean, I'd say I know most people that own pizza shops, and people lean on each other to, like, borrow equipment and, you know, for whatever resources, and I think that's amazing. People, I mean, I don't think that there is even some sort of, like, rivalry or anything like that, like you see in other cities. And I don't know if the other city stuff is fake, you know, maybe it is, but there's kind of like a best pizza thing going on, like, in every town. But all the Portland ones are so diverse, it's kind of like you can't really compare them either.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that part's really interesting. Someone was just asking me, oh, the Portland pizza thing is like putting vegetables on pizza. You know, and I was like, I don't know if that's actually it. It's more of a diverse, you know, like collection of a way of making pizzas that's sort of sets it up. I mean, Portland has really great vegetables, and a lot of pizza places have those, especially as like salads and stuff like that. But I don't really think it's like a vegetable pizza town. That wasn't really my impression, but it's more of like a collection of like sort of owner-run, homespun places started cheaply, you know, mm-hmm. with yeah. that sort of like tying in.
It's a hungry town.
Right.
Yeah. I do think, though, that if there was a pizza that really was a Portland pizza, I do think that Lovely's is it, because it's so, it's a unique style. It's your style that you've developed. It's very personal, and it is so closely connected to the terroir, you know, mm-hmm. you know, more than I think anybody. It's so ultra seasonal. So like, I mean, the pizzas you put out, you cannot put out in Albuquerque.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's like mm-hmm. it's very specific to this place, but I think that's amazing. I was not expecting you to say that about going out to other places, because my kids they always want to go out. to be like, no, we can't afford to go.
I have to like drag my son. If we go out, he's me like, I'm homesick. I don't know. He just wants to be home all the time, which is nice. I mean, and once he goes out, he enjoys it. You know, it's like he has fun, but he's just kind of I have 4 nights off, and I have the kids like all the nights I'm off, which is good. But they kind of just want to like hang out at home. You know, that's kind of their thing. Awesome. I mean, my daughter wants nothing to do with like anything I want to do. So she has her friends, and that's what she wants to do. She does come here with them, which is really cute. Oh, mostly cool. Probably because it's free too. But
that's cool.
You know, yeah. They're more a little about like, she's more about like Dutch brothers and stuff.
Dutch bros. Yeah. Uh-huh. Dutch princess.
Dutch bro. Yeah, yeah. I know. Is that? I know. It's a thing.
Yeah, it is. I know my kids always want to get like Bridge City Pizza. I don't know, they always want to go there, or Pizza Shoals or whatever. It's like they always want me to spend money, and I can't.
Right. My kids did take them to Pizza Shoals, and they have the arcade room thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So now they're just like, they don't actually care about eating. They just want to get the quarters and go into that room.
Yeah.
Which is a great
little arcade room. Yeah.
Sweet. So, anyway, my sister's on top of that stuff. I never pay. I'm always like, what would they? She's like, yeah, I've been saving quarters for like 2 months. And she goes, have like a mason jar of quarters. And I'll be like, wow, you're so good. Like, I didn't even think about that.
I love following your sister on social media. I mean, yeah, she does seem like way on it with like going to the Enchanted Forest or whatever. Like, always like having the places to take the kids. It's like, it's definitely impressive.
She's good at that.
Yeah. Right on. What do you, one question I'd like to ask is, like, what kind of music do you listen to? I'm a huge music person myself. We have shows at Bunk Bar and, you know.
Yeah.
What's your favorite music to listen to while you're making pizza?
You know,
is it important
they
to
do,
you?
Yes. I would say there's kind of a thing here with the music, because we have kind of a big range of clientele, you know, and so we can't. I wouldn't say that we don't play certain types of music. Like after 8, I'm like, whatever happens, happens. But before that, we kind of have to like fill the space. People's grandparents are here, people's kids are here. You can't just like unleash, you know, like whatever we want. But we've got a little looser with it. But I tend to make playlists that kind of work in here. Mm-hmm. So work music does overlap and become like my own music. But staff's always a little bit like, oh, the playlist again. You know, it's like 1,000 songs that go well together and can go on shuffle and be the same, like, loudness and all that. So, but personally, I love all kinds of music. I love hip-hop. I love, you know, I wouldn't say there's even a kind of music that I don't like. And then as I get older, it's even more exciting for me to, like, see it all evolve and see, like, women rappers and become super.
Who's your favorite woman?
Unleash. I mean, I definitely love Cardi B, Nicki Minaj. I love all that stuff. And
How about Rhapsody?
And my daughter and I can connect on that. I don't know if I know Rhapsody.
Oh, you should check out Rhapsody. She's
okay.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know.
Or who's the one?
It's interesting
that,
to listen
Rico
to.
Rico Nasty, that's who my son.
I don't know Rico Nasty. That's a woman that your son likes.
That's cute.
Yeah,
really,
well, my
really
daughter listens to full-blown rap all the time. That's all she listens to. And it's like, it's pretty. Like, I'll be like, oh, wow. You know? Like, and I like a lot of it, but sometimes the lyrics. Sometimes I'm like, this is, I don't really like so much of this whole talk. Like, I'm like,
know,
I get it. And I get that I'm naive.
Oh,
and it's
I agree,
like, but she has no problem with it at all. She's completely
Sometimes I feel like the rap, like, present day rappers are being subsidized by the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah.
How
I know.
Much talk there is a Percocet and Xan.
Yeah, and I'm like, is this really what life is for them? And I try to like not be a white asshole and I really try to like listen and understand. But at some point I am like, I'm not sure the merit behind all this.
Oh, it's
some
just,
of it.
I think partly just getting
some of it's
getting,
amazing.
Getting
plus
old
I mean
too.
I love I love Kendrick Lamar, and I'm just always like, I don't think Kendrick Lamar would say these types of things, you know? And I'm more like, I would just like a little bit more substance beyond that. Yeah. And, I mean, but on the other hand, it's sort of interesting to hear women unleash all that stuff mm-hmm. on top, which I'm like, okay, this is like an interesting twist, because obviously it's like this cultural, you know, like, pot.
You should check out Rico Nasty.
Okay, Rico Nasty.
Yeah,
I'll check it out.
Kind of she's flipping it for sure.
But we do play that sometimes here, like Friday, Saturday after 9. We could play, we just whatever.
Yeah, I love it.
And then the whole staff, besides like one guy, is like, and then like one guy's on my team.
Yeah. I definitely need to update my playlists at Pizza Jerk. I've got. They're getting a little bit overplayed.
It's hard. Yeah. I mean, I'm like, people try to make one and give it to me, and I'm like, we try to listen to it, and they'll be like a quiet song, a high song. I'm it's an art.
Yeah, it really, really need to. I totally agree with you. I mean, there's so many times that I've like, stuff that I love that I just have to not put on a playlist because you're right, it doesn't work for the room. You know, it doesn't work. There's certain stuff that works for, you know, a busy restaurant, you know, or an empty restaurant, you know, or whatever. Yeah,
It's key.
And. How about film?
I haven't seen a movie in years. I'm terrible.
So not a big.
I don't watch any kind of shows or movies or anything.
So there's no
pretty
like
weak.
No big pizza film or pizza memory that you like. Nothing.
Pretty lame. I've actually been working, I think, for like 10 years.
No.
And I remember thinking like, if I had 2 or 3 free hours, I would probably not watch a movie. I would do something else. But, it's been kind of like a bat cave of, you know, getting it done.
Lizzie, you're not Lito get, like, binge on
I'm
a TV show or anything like that?
I did watch Breaking Bad. I binged Breaking Bad somewhere in there in the 10 years. And then I watched Game of Thrones.
Okay. The whole series?
Yeah, the whole series.
Oh, wow.
Watched it.
Yeah, I gave up.
I really, I know. Wild. I stuck it out. Yeah.
And Breaking Bad too. I'm like, I'm so
Breaking
bad with
Bad
it. Like,
was amazing. I loved it.
No, it's so great. But I can't like, about like the 3rd or 4th season of something. It was that way with The Sopranos too. But have you seen Fleabag?
Mm-mm.
So it just won a bunch of them. It's a British TV show. They did 2 seasons of. Fantastic.
Okay.
Phoebe
okay.
Waller-Bridge, and who's like hosting Saturday Night Live this week, actually.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I'm coming out of all that, and I'm maybe going to be watching a movie soon.
Nice. I recommend it. I recommend it, though. Do you have any plans for the future? I mean, keep doing what you're doing? I mean, are there any plans for any other lovelies? Or
no.
Just no?
Mm-mm. I would like to, I'm not sure if we ever will, sell the building next door and build a building that we own to run out of. But there's not a lot for sale, and I'm not really sure, like, if that will happen. And we're kind of good here also. I mean, I think that would be a really good next step for me, and that would be a really fun project to do. And just have it, just build it exactly how I want it. I mean, I think it would be actually really fun on this street to just build a very small building, which is like the opposite of what everybody wants to do. I mean, it does have height limits because it's a historical street. But I would just build like pretty much the exact same thing, probably with skylights, and then be good. I would really like to do that. But like I said, it's just kind of like there's not much for sale. The lots are like $1 million for just the land. And like, I don't know if our building is worth that. Like, we could swap out somehow, but haven't done a lot of investigating to see like what is available and, you know, able to be financed. You know, it's all kind of tricky. But I don't have any plan. I don't have any desire to have two, because the one is already killing, you know, the one is already enough. Like, if someone's sick, it's always, you know, then you work the whole week. I mean, things have loosened up for me now. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm able to like take time off and have a great, amazing kitchen team, front of house team. So all that stuff is easy, but I definitely recognize like if there were two, and it would be for me and my sister, would be a lot for us to be able to just personally handle. Yeah. we wouldn't be good at it, I think, also.
For sure. Do you still have a hand in making the ice cream?
Yeah.
Yeah. The ice cream, I do want to just...
Yes, make it all. No, I did this summer. In the summer, I have someone who spins it all, which is great.
But I do want to make a note of that, and is that the ice cream is at Lovely's 5050 is fantastic. It's really... really, really incredible, and some of the best ice cream that I've ever had in my whole life.
Thanks, Tommy.
And worth the trip from anywhere just for the ice creams. But I mean, you come here and you get the pizza, the salads, ice cream, the whole experience. It's amazing. So, one other thing I just wanted to touch on was you've hosted a couple of really great nights here of having guests, like you had Joe Perlman and Joe Bedia, both last year or this year.
We had Katie Parla.
Oh, Katie, yeah. I'm not Dan Perlman. That's cool. I'm saying Katie Parla. Yeah.
I
see the books right up there.
And Joe Bedia. Mm-hmm. That was fun.
Yeah, is that something you like? How did that come about? And like, is that something you see?
What did Joe? I think came about because why don't I remember why? I think he wanted to do something, and I was like, let's just do like a pop up or whatever. And I had met him. He came to Lovely's the year before, and so we had been talking about doing that. And that was really insane. I think for both of us, we were kind of just like, oh my God, because people flew here for it, which was, I mean, I just watched him be very stressed because it was a lot of people lined up. I think there were like 200 people lined up at five. And he, you know, I just think from having that in his own pizza place and having so much, like whatever the press was that made him like best pizza in America.
Yeah.
It was like, the experience was really great. It was really stressful too, because there's just a lot riding on all that, and you're just kind of like, I don't know, you're making pizza somewhere weird, you know, that you don't really make pizza, but whatever. It was fun to hang out with him and see his process. And like he made all the dough, and it was like a yeast issue. He had to like get fresh yeast from somewhere, all this stuff, and then he made all the dough, and then he left for the day, and I opened up the dough fridge, and it was like exploding everywhere. And I sent him a photo, and I was like, is this okay? And he's like, yeah, that's totally fine. That's fine. Just shut the door. It'll be fine tomorrow. And it totally was. I just wasn't used to it, and we kind of had it in these small containers. So, you know, like all that part was like really fun and memorable.
you do a naturally leavened pizza here. Yeah. And how did you come about doing that?
I think it came from when we used to use yeast, and then when I took over the kitchen, I was like, I'm gonna have to learn something about bread making, you know. And even Matt was like, you should try sourdough, and I was like, oh, I don't know. We then have to like feed it all the time, and it's a lot. And then I got tartine bread and just started read that book and make bread out of that, and that's just sourdough. It's very basic, it's easy. I mean, sourdough is really, really easy. It's not anything tricky about it. It's just a matter of like paying attention and feeding it, you know. But it took me a long time to get it honed down, because it's kind of a hot mess when you're first learning it. And then eventually I think it was like 3 or 4 months after I took over the kitchen, I just changed it over, and it, you know, it just works the same way basically. But it's a lot for me. It's a better method for our style of pizza, and I've used yeast since and been like, it's, I don't see them as that different, yeah, you know, of a process when you're doing it all, like making poulaches or making whatever. It's like, it's similar. But for me, I get more flavor and everything else from the sourdough process.
I'd love to learn more about that. Have you ever...
Just go get the tartine bread. Start making some bread.
Are you going to teach some classes or something like that?
I've taught some classes. I'm not that good at it. Like, I remember the classes I taught. I was like, Elder Hall was all, this is the only class I'm ever teaching, guys. So here's my phone number. If you have any questions later, call me. But, I mean, I'll do it, you know, for, like, yeah, schools or something, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
But I'd say overall it's, like, not what I... am good at or have too much fun doing. And plus it's hard, like pizza at home is hard because the equipment is, it's not like making pasta, you know, it's like the oven and the everything else is a little bit trickier. You can't just go home and make great pizza in your oven. I mean, to me, you cannot almost not do it because it's like the stones and everything you can approximate, but not quite gonna be the same.
Seems like there's more and more, there's better little ovens coming out now, like that Breville.
If you have $1,000 or whatever for an oven, you're good to go. Well, but most people are like,
You know, whatever, how much did it used to, like, the idea of putting in a wood oven in your backyard, if you could, where it had the room or the space to do that even, you know?
It's
I
true.
Mean, you're talking, like, thousands and thousands of dollars. So, I mean,
there
it's
are
cool
several ways to do it.
Rock box.
Yeah, I mean, stuff. I work for Breville sometimes, but beyond that, I would say that oven is amazing, and I can get pretty much the same pizzas out of this oven and that oven.
That's cool.
For some reason, whatever scientists like figured it all out, engineered it works really well. Like that's a total game changer right there. But I'd say probably most people don't have that because they're always sold out of it. I don't even know, but
people love pizza. I mean, they, you know, I think that's definitely appealing to a lot of people to be able to do that at home. I mean, I wish that I had something like that at home.
Yeah, you know, actually, my mom always made pizza, which is kind of weird. And I forgot to mention that memory about pizza because she would just make sheet pizza at home. Uh-huh. And she would just, I think she made the dough and everything. And it was just like, here you go, guys. And we just loved it.
So good.
Like, as kids, I think we did it pretty often, like, during this period of my childhood. So you don't, I think to me it's like, when I make pizza at home, I'm a little bit like, you know, like, oh, get the oven hot, kids, get out of here. You know, so it's a little less fun than probably what most people are doing at home, which is like, they just kind of want to be able to make a basic pizza have it be pretty good. They don't really care if it's like, everything's perfect. So it's hard also to make that separation, you know, but...
Well, it's got to be fun, right? I mean, pizza's fun, you know?
It's nice that it's kind of hard to make at home because it keeps people, you know,
coming out.
I mean, the dough, I think, is what's harder for people, too. That's what they get hung up on, you know?
Well, that's, I mean, that is the thing about pizza. I mean, there's that joke about, you know, good pizza, you know, it's, you know, whatever. It's, I don't know, I can't even think about the joke. It's like... pizza being like sex or something, like, even when it's bad, it's kind of good, which is a terrible joke, but,
well,
like,
even shitty pizza, I was talking about Katie, I was talking to Katie from Pokini about pizza, and she was saying, I can't remember what pizza Hugo liked, but it was some kind of crappy one, he was like, and I was like, pretty good, you know, and also, like, I took my kids to New Seasons, and it was just, like, late one night, I was like, just get whatever you think you're going to eat for dinner, and they had the Annie's frozen pizza, and I was just like, really?
I know my kids still get frozen pizza. I'm like,
that's easy.
I'm like, no,
sure,
we're not getting frozen pizza, like,
I'm like, that's fine, just get it.
Totally, yeah.
And they ate the whole thing, I was like, all right, sweet.
So, I mean, I think that is, you know, it's something to remember that, like, you know, even... I think you and I both are wanting to try and strive for to make the best pizza we can, but at some points you just have to kind of like let go and just let the experience be and let it, you know, have some fun doing it with your kids or whatever.
I mean, food snobs lose.
Food snobs lose. I love it.
Or what is it? They finish last. There's no point. You know, I've definitely found that. It's like, There's no winning with that.
I think that's a good note to end on. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thanks,
really,
Tommy.
Really grateful for you to be on the show. I really appreciate you being our guest. And look forward to eating pizza with you soon.
Great. All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Hi. Welcome to Portland Pizza Podcast, a show about all things pizza. Broadcasting from Portland, Oregon. We feature in-depth interviews with some of the most influential pizza makers in Portland and beyond. I'm your host, Tommy Habits from Pizza Jerk. Let's talk pizza. Welcome to Portland Pizza Podcast.
Why? What is wrong with me this morning? All right, sorry. Let's go again.